The great Elie Wiesel once said, "The opposite of love is not hate, it's indifference." You guys, it's Andy's Girls. We got to talk about Potomac, okay? I really think that that we need to talk about Potomac. So it's episode, I don't know, we're in the 500s. Leave me alone. And I finally caught up on The Real Housewives of Potomac. It was a journey that I had been delaying, nay, dreading for several weeks, I guess technically months. I stopped watching in a relatively timely manner, I guess during the Austin trip or right after. And I thought to myself, you know what? You're still once again no longer in Europe. And I just felt the need to catch up while this season is technically, a true technicality, technically still airing, because I did want to see the reunion. And a reunion at best can both encapsulate a season and potentially continue it, you know, continuing storylines, maybe creating new ones, unearthing moments, or really just kind of connecting the dots. A bad reunion is technically an episode that airs that I may or may not have watched. And I just felt like I'm not a quitter. I'm just not a quitter. Aside from that time that I quit the COVID season of The Real Housewives of Orange County, and in all honesty, a pretty significant likelihood the upcoming season of The Real Housewives of Dubai. But aside from those two seasons, I mean, and to call them seasons, one of which we hasn't, quite literally hasn't aired, I'm very confident about shit talking. Aside from those seasons, I do believe I have seen every episode of every season of Housewives. And yes, that does include, of course, DC. And until relatively recently, it wasn't a matter of seeing every episode, but just how many times I had seen every episode. These days, it's oftentimes once, just because there are so many other shows that have my attention, including ones on Bravo. I mean, I got a message from an AG who had seen me post on Instagram about the fact that I was catching up on Potomac and thanked me and said, you know, I'm thankful that you're watching because a lot of content creators have given up. And I appreciated it, but I also kind of felt like this is the worst case scenario to be in a franchise where it's not even that it's so bad that people are like shit talking it. It's that there are a lot of people that are deeply incurious, like myself, in or confused, honestly, in what is going on. And I think there are a ton of content creators who just, to me, understandably gave up because this season is such a mess, and I wish it was bad because at least then there would be more to potentially discuss. And there are things that I want to talk about. Like, there are things that came up that I thought were interesting or nuanced, but an awful lot of it is just frustrating or confusing or uneven in a way that doesn't even support direct upset about this season. It's just more of a kind of like, what the fuck? And I don't know how, what makes this, in the words of any good Passover Seder, like, what makes this night different from all other nights? I do think it's this weird fragility in the cast because there are several cast members that truly hate each other. And Lord knows, on any number of franchises, there are cast members who do not want to fuck with each other, who hate each other. I mean, it's not a Housewives franchise, even though it certainly feels like a soap opera more often than not. But like Vanderpump Rules, we're not going to be referencing Sandoval here, except to say that when there is a cast member who several other cast members do not fuck with, that can make continuing storyline difficult. He inhibits the continuation of storyline and plot. And yet it is somewhat wild when you think about like Lala and Sheena and Schwartz's behavior in wanting to figure out a way to have Sandoval in the group. And I think about Potomac and I'm like, listen, I don't agree with some of the cast members' decisions on Vanderpump Rules with the Tom of it all. But like, it's wild to me that people on Vanderpump Rules seem to be more open and accepting to having Tom be in the group than like what we're seeing go on with Giselle and Robin versus Wendy and Candace, where there's just no way to move this forward. And if there's this large of a stopgap, how are we supposed to figure out ways to talk about the franchise when members of the cast refuse to? Like, it's sort of inexplicable to me, but at least it's honest. Like, at least we know that Candace and Wendy and Giselle and Robin seem to dislike each other so much that not even doing their job is more important than being honest about the grudge. I don't think all four of these people are going to have the same line of work next season, but you could argue that if you're going to go out, I guess being honest about how much you hate some of the other people on the couch is something to be said. I kind of wonder, I have no idea who's like running production this season. They're not doing a very good job. Not like they've been handed this like bountiful, you know, basket of fruit to make into some like gorgeous centerpiece or something. Some of this stuff is deeply out of season, but there does not seem to be a willingness to connect the dots, which should have maybe inspired people in production prior to the season of reevaluating maybe members of the cast. It didn't feel like the friend of that was introduced this season was really enough of a presence or was even intended to be a presence. Like, it felt like she was a true friend of, which is honestly kind of refreshing. Someone who is like quite literally a friend of members of the cast and isn't in and of herself a character. So it wasn't like this new person was being added in to see what happens. Obviously we have NECA as a new member of the cast and that has gone, can I say poorly? I don't dislike NECA, and there are, and it's not like I'm obsessed with Dr. Wendy. And frankly, there's just so many questions I have and confusing layers to some of these feuds that I don't think will ever be resolved. Like, for example, the conversation that NECA and Dr. Wendy had went nowhere. And one of the reasons it went nowhere is because I don't think Dr. Wendy will ever acknowledge her family's upset or conversation about NECA joining the show and doing so as a surrogate of Dr. Wendy. Like, Dr. Wendy wasn't making those calls, but people in her family were. Now, I appreciated NECA for apologizing for calling, you know, Dr. Wendy's mom out of her name. But I don't think we can get further than that because Dr. Wendy can't return the favor. She just cannot, refuses to, or there's some other dynamic going on around where she just will not admit, I guess, that some of those conversations did in fact take place, which is, to me, it's like outside of the stuff that's going on with calling her mom a witch. It's like, it's to me unrelated to that. It's just the fact that there were conversations taking place about some feeling of upset about NECA joining the cast and that being seen as an affront to Dr. Wendy. And I don't know if we'll really get there at the reunion, but I don't know if any of that matters. Because again, there are members of this cast that like just really truly will not fuck with each other. And I'm left kind of feeling like, why should we care? The whole purpose of Housewives when it comes to conflict is to dangle like a carrot in front of us. Usually when it comes to the reunion, the idea that these women just need to reveal their feelings and kind of like, you know, shouted out at points and lead to some sort of resolution. And maybe that resolution is, we'll continue to work on our friendship next season when we're both back. And maybe that resolution is like, I don't agree with your perspective, or I understand your perspective, or now that, you know, Andy has moderated us for 2.5 parts of a reunion arc, I feel a little bit better than I did before, or at least I just got it all out. Like, there's no dangling carrot here. Like, we're not, I don't think anyone is thinking that resolution will actually happen. And I wonder if production did at any point sit down with members of the cast pre-reunion and say, like, some of your jobs, that's assuming members of the production were still working on production. I mean, check those LinkedIns. Sitting down with the cast and saying, like, your jobs are on the line if you do not speak to each other. If we are having cast dynamics where scene after scene, people won't acknowledge the other person's presence, then why am I watching? Like, it is a total stalemate that feels stale. It's putting the stale in stalemate. It does not give me any kind of stake in the game. It doesn't give me a sense that we're even able to get to the place of talking about some of the hurt behind the silence, because does it matter? If you hate this person, you don't want to acknowledge their existence. You don't think of them as a human being because maybe they've done so much harm, or there's just so much damage that's being done where they don't even deserve that to you, where you're just minding time until the season ends. That's not giving us really a season to delight in. And for me as a content creator, the worst case scenario for me as a content creator, even before being a viewer, and I really do put viewer first, to be honest, but if there is nothing to talk about, that is a bad position to be in as a content creator. It's also why I don't, you know, it's tough to have episodes where there are guests who I ask before an episode, have you watched Potomac? No, I haven't watched since, for many of us, honestly, since the Austin trip, or it's just not something I'm interested in, or because I have a rotating crew of guest co-hosts, people are going to want to come in to talk about specific aspects of Beverly Hills, maybe, or Miami, or Vanderpump Rules, or something else. And it's tough when people aren't interested in talking about Potomac because there's nothing else for a lot of people to necessarily talk about, including myself for many, many weeks. But this is a bad season, and there's not a lot to say about the matter. Like, it's like when a parent says to a kid who's in trouble, like, you know, I'm just disappointed in you. And the idea that that's the worst thing you can possibly hear, there's an element of just disappointment and confusion and, yeah, sure, some frustration about what we're watching and how the fact that it couldn't be fixed at any point. But maybe this is what was meant to happen this season, to show that the continuation of this cast is impossible. There's no way to move forward. And I say this noting that I think another layer of some people not wanting to delve deep into the waters of Potomac is because the audience is so fucking divisive. So God forbid you mention Candace on social, or Giselle, or Robin, or Dr. Wendy potentially, or Ashley, you're going to likely stir up a lot of heat. And why would you do that if you don't even feel like the conversation you would potentially be broaching is interesting or important? Like, why wade into waters that deep if you don't even feel like the journey is worth it to begin with, or an opinion can even be formed? And I watched so many episodes of Potomac this week, and I just watched before pressing record, I rewatched the second to most recent episode, and then I watched for the first time the most recent episode. And I really kind of thought to myself, maybe for the first time in a minute, watching the members of the cast, I really thought to myself, like, I don't dislike or hate anyone on this cast right now. Like, I don't have big feelings about Giselle. I know that Giselle is a polarizing figure, potentially for some people, maybe more polarizing than Candace, or maybe equally polarizing, just in terms of what emotions are brought up in people attempting to express opinion as absolute fact. And I don't really have I don't have big emotions about Giselle. I appreciated the grace of it all. I really, really loved that moment where Grace is talking about what she learned from her mom, and you see the breaking of the fourth wall in a way that I don't remember a breaking of the fourth wall happening exactly like this with the child of a housewife. And I loved it when it was like the camera pull away from Grace and seeing the producer asking her questions next to Giselle and watching the interaction between Grace and the camera, Grace and the producer, Grace and Giselle, Giselle asking Grace questions, Grace talking about the fact that she understood from watching her mom parent as a single parent, as the primary caregiver for her three girls, and coming out of that experience, now 18, heading off to college and feeling like I can do anything because I've seen my mom do it all. Like, I've seen the way that my mom has been independent and has been able to provide for us. And now I have an understanding of what I can do for myself. And I'm sorry, that is incredibly, it's genuinely wonderful to hear from a child. I can't explain how gratifying it must have been for Giselle to hear that, because to have your child say, I feel comfortable, I feel confident. Of course, she's nervous going up to college, all of us were, but I feel like I will be able to tackle what happens to me next, what happens to life, because I saw the way my mom was able to deal with really big hurdles. That's incredible. And to know that she can stand on her own two feet and maybe know the importance of identifying as herself first before anyone else, before being the first wife, before being an ex-wife, before being a mom, maybe even, that she has an understanding of the importance of her own independence and her own security in herself. Those were the takeaways that I got from that moment. I pulled it all out from that, and the moments of Grace saying goodbye and graduating, all of which I thought were incredibly powerful. And I can't get into it. It's just too much for me. But what Giselle is going through with her family is so upsetting. And we know after the fact that her father's passed away, and can't do it, guys. Can't do it. But let me have a little taste of my sodium water real quick. Suffice it to say, regardless of what you hear from people, I do think that Giselle is, spoiler alert, a human person. One who does not delight in revealing aspects of her vulnerability. And so while I am so sorry to see what she is going through in real time before the launch of, what the fuck is it, GNA? It just reminds me of GM, like Good Morning America. And then I just get really confused. Also, sidebar, I was at the Reality Tea, shout out friends of the pod, Danny and Evans, podcast for Page Six at City Winery, when Ashley announced that she was coming out with a clothing line with Giselle. And I have gotten into trouble for this the entirety of my life, where sometimes I just like say something or I'll just react because it's just instinct. It's like so honest. And I've gotten in trouble for that many times. Like, you know, oh, what did you think of that show I was in? I'd be like, oh my God, it was terrible. Like, just like without thinking. Sometimes I forget the wonderful, wonderful world of tact. And I was so shocked when Ashley, who was one of the guest housewives on stage, this was also the event where Sutton talked about going to Erica's show with $7 tickets, which then became a big part of the reunion and season or whatever. But anyway, when Ashley said, I'm starting a fashion line or whatever with Giselle, I laughed so loudly because I couldn't believe it. Of all of people, I mean, why was the name of the line not Purple Walls? Like, it doesn't make sense. Giselle's sense of interior design is probably on par with her closet, and that is telling you somewhat something. Like, the woman does not have the gift in that way. She has so many other gifts. She could model in someone else's collection. She's drop dead gorgeous, beautiful. but she doesn't carry the light in that way. And I think Ashley reacted to it because it was just so loud. I couldn't help it. It was so shocking to me that anyone would choose to come out with a fashion line with Giselle. Of all of the people, of all of the people on that stage, could we not find a leftover box of Robin's hats? Why is Robin Dixon, by the way, thinking about leasing an office to come out with a, what is it, a franchise facial company or something? And the people that she's asking for advice are also the people who were forced out of their line of work. So it's like, how is any of this making sense? And she's like, this is the biggest investment I've ever made. Ma'am, maybe we should be investing in that marriage a little bit, or at least how to leave it before we make significant financial choices in whatever we're supposed to do next. And also, why is it Robin who's the person who has to take on yet another gig? Why isn't Juan doing that? Or maybe he'll be the office manager or something. It's not great. I mean, the gift that that scene gave us was, I guess, maybe also the thesis statement for this season. Don't just wish for it, work for it. I mean, if that wasn't its own spiritual breaking of the fourth wall, I don't even know what we're talking about. But anyway, back to Giselle. I think she's also, you know, shitty at times, very strategic, very manipulative, and hates Candace. It's like some of the worst things that I could argue about some of these cast members is just how much they hate each other, which also happens to be very honest. So how hard do I need to criticize Giselle really hates Candace so much that she's unwilling to interact, and Candace really hates Giselle and I guess now Robin, which I don't understand, so much that they refuse to interact with each other as a cast, and then also Dr. Wendy, dot, dot, dot. I mean, it's hard to sort of figure out who these women are because they're not allowing us to see other aspects of themselves when they're out with each other. And ultimately, this isn't just like people who live in Potomac or also, I guess, Virginia and et cetera, who come together now and again to ignore each other over lunch. It's ostensibly about a circle of friends or something. Like, is there another shape we can do if not a circle? We haven't quite figured that out. It's maybe the most, I don't want to say it's the most abrasive of seasons. It's just the most perplexing. And you would think that having watched about 1,586 episodes of Potomac this week, that I would have a better understanding of what the fuck is happening with Candace and Robin. And yet I absolutely do not. I, in fact, had to text one of my like Bravo content creator, like text thread, group people, things, et cetera, whatnot. I'm very young to say, does anyone understand what is happening with Candace and the like blogger podcaster who Robin sent text to or something? And no one did and no one cared. And I appreciated that because it was at least honest in the ways that members of the cast honestly are battling this out. But when you have then confessionals of other women in the cast saying, I don't understand what's going on, that's not helpful for me. I need someone to translate this. And it's not helpful that the editors are not doing a particularly good job, because at that crab boil without, I guess, pepper and salt and spice mixes, and it just sounded like it was just crab, which, I mean, I've been a vegetarian for 150 years, but that doesn't sound great. Just like boiled crab with nothing on it, or broiled, whatever. It was cooked, microwaved, throw it in a, you know, sheet pan and call it a day. But when Candace was sort of frustrated and shouting about what Robin had done to her by leaking text messages to a podcaster, blogger, podcaster, the edit shows at least one point, I think twice, where Candace is saying something that's obviously like ADR, it's audio that's been edited in post, which wouldn't be as big of a deal to me. except that her mouth is saying something else. I watched it several times, both because I couldn't believe the edit was that sloppy to show her literally saying other words and then having her voice say in real time, not like it was coming from a confessional, but because we were supposed to believe she was saying that at the same time, you know, you share text messages with a podcaster blogger and she's saying something totally different. It's like not even the words podcaster blogger at that point. And, you know, there are things like a Franken edit. There are many, many times where producers have looped over other words over scenes where you see like the back of someone's head, or maybe it looks like someone's whispering and the ADR is something entirely different, which sometimes housewives are allowed to slightly object to if this is something they did in fact not say at that point, but they're being dragged in the mud for production's sort of crafty edit. And other points where maybe it is a sound issue or they needed to say something along those lines, but slightly different. But this just felt like fucking sloppy AF. So how am I supposed to really give a shit about this weird tech situation when not only is the camera using a shot of Candace saying different words that do not match in any way what she is saying in looped in audio, but then we go to a confessional of her with like the masked singer of, I guess, Friends, whose voice was disguised. Do we care that much about not wanting to know who this person is? Is it really that big of a deal that, I guess, according to this confessional, Candace like has friends who keep tabs on what's said about her, and someone said that something happened involving Robin and someone else, and this person is reaching out to Candace to say that because he heard from someone else that Robin had sent texts to a blogger or podcaster or something, and this is supposed to be the big reveal? And also, I don't understand sort of any aspect of it, including not just why we should care, but what the actual issue is. I think Charisse is one of the people in the confessionals who was like, there's no there there. And also, Robin is the person who was defending you. So why are you bringing all of this frustration directly at her? I guess Candace says that this is proof that Robin showing text messages is proof that Robin was trying to say, was trying to put Candace on blast. But I think the point of it was that Candace said she took to social media to drag Robin because Robin wasn't responding to text messages. And that's just Robin saying, I guess, I haven't seen the text thread. I don't even know who the blogger podcaster is. I have no idea who they're talking about. It's so weird and confusing, and I don't understand the stakes. It feels like a game of telephone, except the telephone is a camouflaged voice on a confessional saying somebody said something who told me, so I'm telling you about the release of text. If the texts are doctored, I guess that's something to talk about, but that's not the thing. The thing is that Candace is upset because she feels like Robin is coming for her reputation. But I thought the whole point of this was that Candace was defending why she took to social media to drag Robin's reputation. And she said the reason she did that was because she couldn't get in touch or have a conversation with Robin in real time. And Robin isn't even really contesting the rest of it in that moment. She's just saying, if she's sending her texts, if she's sharing texts, I assume that the reason she's doing that is to be like, no, we were communicative. We were in touch. So if she's saying that she only took to social media because she couldn't get in touch with me privately, I'm just showing that that is not entirely the truth. It doesn't matter so deeply. And the fact that it took me maybe an hour and a half to try to describe this dumb fight at a poorly seasoned crab boil is not a great indicator of the season. And also, I do think that somewhere at some point in time, including the present time, I do think that there is still love between Candace and Robin. There's just so much hurt because Candace feels like, sort of a la conspiracy theory, she feels that the only reason that Robin defended Chris against Giselle last season is, in Candace's words, because Robin was doing that while at the same time, I guess, conspiring with Giselle to bring those accusations to light. I don't even know if that's accurate. I think it is. I should know. I should have a clear idea in which to make a determination or an opinion about all this. But I'm just so flummoxed about all of the ways that, like, this just feels like birdseed. It feels like these little things on the ground that might attract, I don't know, I live in New York, a pigeon, a magpie, perhaps, a little robin. Oh, I mean, hello, birds of a feather. It's not enough to feed me, or frankly, even the bird. Paris is always a good idea. And when I schlep on over to Europe, to my favorite city in the world, I bring with me a few important phrases that I have learned from housewives. C'est bon, chic c'est la vie. Je m'appelle the Countess, n'est-ce pas, Luann? And while those key phrases are important when speaking to any French bravoholic, for other matters of life, that's where Rosetta Stone comes in. Rosetta Stone is the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered, including, of course, French. It features fast language acquisition. It immerses you in so many ways. There's no English translations, so you really learn to speak, to listen, and to think in that language. It's an intuitive process. You pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. J'adore Chris Manzo. Et toi? There's a speech recognition filter which gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's convenient with desktop and app options, and it's an amazing value. Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership has all 25 languages for any and all trips and language needs in life. That's lifetime access to all 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. A steal. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, AGs can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. Today. Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo. And when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth. And when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon, c'est bon. So I guess now we're dealing with like Robin being upset because she feels like her reputation is soiled. Robin being upset because she feels like, why did I, this is the prize I get, the reward I get for defending you is that you're saying I only did it for this other nefarious reason. I don't know. At a certain point, if you care about this person and they're telling you they believe your husband, maybe just take their word for it. If you're also upset because you feel like they knew what their husband was doing in real time and Giselle knew what Juan was doing in real time and we're still talking about Chris, you can have that conversation too. But it's just a weird thing to have such few vocal defenders on your cast to come at Robin for exactly the defense that I think helped Chris. In just hearing someone say in real time, I don't believe what's being said, and I think it's kind of being blown out of proportion. Why are we contesting that? I think that's a good thing for Robin to say and to support Candace and to support Chris. I'm not minimizing Candace's upset about the reveal of Juan, but that's a whole other fucking issue. It's like Robin's on this show and I don't want to see her continue to humiliate herself in front of this man because of him, because she chooses to stay with him and is still living in this fantasy land. At one point on one of these episodes, and I wrote it down because I was so shocked, she said to somebody somewhere at something that she and Juan aren't in therapy. They just need to, quote, enjoy life more. At that point, I went to a candy store on the Upper East Side that sells vegan gluten-free candy. And I was like, I need some like gummy worms or something to get me through this. I was truly watching an episode on my phone, walking to Bon Bon, Upper East Side, which, spoiler alert, all their New York City locations, I think all of them are open until midnight, which is insane, but amazing. I think it's intended for college students. But again, spiritually mid-20s plus, this is continuing ed after all. I just couldn't imagine Robin at this point. We know Juan fucked Miss Canada. Like, it's not even a question. If she wants to continue to embarrass herself by saying he's just too good of a guy that someone reached out to him over DM and said, oh my God, my credit card won't work. Hey, stranger who I've seen on my DVR or whatever, would you mind, I guess, driving instead of, you know, figuring out a bill online or Venmoing me, would you mind terribly driving to this local area hotel I happen to be visiting when my significant other left me here to fend for myself and paying this tab? Sir, good sir, would you please? So he does that. And you think to yourself, after the vow renewal, God help us all, and everything else that you guys have gone through, including his continuing just almost disgust about being in the situation he's in now, which says everything about him, except the show is about her. So I have to continue to watch this weird fucking mirage and pretend that I'm not watching what I'm watching, which is a relationship that probably shouldn't have continued, keep going. And the only investment I could possibly feel that feels somewhat optimistic is maybe one day Robin will wake up. But if she continues wanting to live in a state of denial, she has every right to. She's not the first person in the world to stay married, maybe arguably when she should not. Like, some of that independent spirit that Grace is talking about, I wish that Robin had. But for whatever reason, she's choosing to stay with this man. Okay, cool. He seems like a great guy. So we're pretending that this is all working out. And you're saying that the thing you guys need to be working on is having more fun. Arguably, Juan is having too much fun right now. I would pull back on Juan's fun. I don't think the issue here is finding more fun. I think the issue here is like, you should be in therapy. You are not. Even if you could be in a great place finding fun every Thursday at 2 o'clock. I think that would be helpful to just kind of, and it could be, God forbid, off camera. It just would make me feel like Robin is more connected to reality. And if this season of Potomac is directly outside of the world of any kind of continuity style housewives narrative storytelling, I just want to feel like aspects of her life are, and I'm not getting that.
It's not as bad when it comes to her work stuff as like what we've experienced with Dr. Wendy opening up a bar with Peter, because that sounds great. Or like doing the video stuff before, or the 800 other things she was doing before that. Now it seems like she has a real show that she's working on. I was very, very impressed at the caliber of guests she had for essentially her pilot episode. I was very confused about the lighting that we saw, but maybe that's because it was the Potomac Housewives cameras capturing that and not something else. But it seems like she's like full steam ahead with that. That at least feels like, I guess, a realistic storyline, albeit a tired one. It just feels like every season is like how Dr. Wendy reinvents herself. And I just wonder like why she has to keep reinventing herself. Isn't there enough here for us to work on? Versus Giselle, where one could argue that much of the time she doesn't have a storyline. Her storyline is kind of like fucking with other people, which has worked. I think she's been successful for a very long time. This was maybe last season was the first season where I really started to think like, what would Potomac look like without Giselle? And I didn't want to go that far because I would argue that for the majority at least, of Giselle's time on Potomac, she has been a stellar housewife. She might be a terrible friend. She might be like a piece of shit to other cast members. You could say the same thing about Ashley. I guess many people do. So what am I even talking about? I'm like devil's advocate. Ashley does a lot of producing. That's just really the advocate. That's not even the devil's nowhere to be seen. The devil's DMing Juan from places unknown. Do you mind Juan just showing up to this hotel here in Midtown East? I know we haven't met each other ever before, but I would really appreciate if you'd pay my bill and maybe we could say hi. Did we even get to that point of the story? Did Juan get to meet this person, this poor woman who gets dragged into all of us? I frankly, it's like, I don't even know what to say about that. He's the one who's married. I don't love whatever interaction was taking place. I'm not going to say I'm like pro whatever that dynamic is, but he's the one I'm more than happy to drag. But did we ever get like her saying thank you in person to him? Or are we just pretending that this imaginary game in which he's just a great guy and that's all there is to discuss is just going to continue on? I don't know. I couldn't even tell you. But you know, the thing with Giselle is that I think she's been a really strong housewife, certainly stronger at the beginning, I would say, than now. And now it just feels like there's this unfortunate, it's a fucking shit show is what it is. And I don't know if you had to say, which I think is a conversation that's probably going to happen, assuming it has not already, who do you move forward in the show with, Candace or Giselle? I would have argued Giselle is like the backbone of the show, but I don't think she is anymore. And I think there's more potential with storyline with Candace. I wish it wasn't either or. I really do. But I'm taking them at their word that these women hate each other. If you cannot acknowledge the other person, the other person's existence, if there's so much frustration and upset between these women that they cannot say, walk up to someone and say, listen, we hate each other, but I'm so sorry to hear about your dad, because they feel like that respect was not given to them, like what Dr. Wendy explained with stuff going on with her mom. And then like the answer back, I think, from Mia of like, well, we didn't know the extent of it, but it sort of doesn't matter. It's just, that's a shit show to me. If you can't go in front of this person, in front of the cameras, and say, I'm sorry for what you're experiencing, and just have that moment, it's just such a terrible indicator of what this season has become. But there were also moments that were great, that were interesting, that were nuanced, none of which involves Ashley's forthcoming maybe divorce from Michael. Why am I still confused about that, by the way? At first, I thought maybe it's like a Vicky Don situation where the reason that Vicky didn't sign and finalize the divorce from Don was because at that point she had to cut him a big fucking check. So she was like, I get where we're going, but we're not going to finalize this quite yet. I was wondering if there was like maybe some version of that with Ashley and Michael, but I also don't totally understand their finances. And then at one point, did I make this up in the fever dream that was watching Potomac at length? Did I make this up that at one point Ashley said that Michael threatened to sue her if she talked shit about him? I swear to God, I think that happened. I really think that happened. And at that point I was like, oh, so you married a monster then? Like, for everything I've said up until this point about Juan, Juan isn't in a financial position to sue truly anyone, including himself, but I could not imagine Juan doing what Michael is. I mean, like, Michael is like a Disney villain. The fact that he is, I guess, maybe threatening his wife or having that, you know, Venmo request on hand or whatever else, plus you have to co-parent with this person, the added level of how Michael is, spoiler alert, fun word, weaponizing his wealth and resources against both another member of the cast, Candace, and also his estranged wife is so gross to me. This man has always been disgusting, and Ashley has tried to like repackage him as maybe something else or just been like, my eyes, like look away, look somewhere else. The kids are so cute. Ugh, he is up to no good. He's never going to be great. And now you have to have this man in your life forever. I guess now you know in the process of divorce exactly what kind of guy it was that you married. I don't think Michael changed even a little bit after he got married. I think he became more and more himself, and that was just untenable at the end. I don't know how much room there was for Ashley, but certainly not enough. And I guess a lot of people think Ashley's a piece of shit. I find something sort of endearing in the ways that she can manipulate for a plot. I think it is and has been at times a benefit. I do appreciate the fact that she and Candace are able to have this kind. I wish that the dynamic that Ashley and Candace had is one that Candace and Giselle could have, but I understand at this point that that is absolutely impossible and entirely unrealistic and something that neither of them want. So if neither of them want to interact with each other, then let's give them what they want, which is them not interacting with each other, which means one of them or both of them is off the show. We need to keep, like, I think it's actually helpful that it's not like I'm riding hard for Giselle or Candace or I'm not against either of them. I don't have strong feelings toward Giselle. I don't have strong feelings toward Candace in a way that's negative about either of them. I can sort of understand the benefits of them past and present, not really present because this season is a mess, but like past and like technically maybe present. And then in the future, they can't stay on the show. They both cannot stay on the show. And Robin, I think, has to go regardless. It's truly not working out. I wish her the best with the 30-minute facial thing, facial go or facial now or now face or face 30 or 60 or 45. And wish her the best with Juan, I guess, because that seems to be the choice that she's actively making every single day of her life. And if it works for her, which I would argue it absolutely does not, that's what matters. Like, if she's happy, which I would argue she isn't, but if this is her version of happiness, is staying with this man, then she can make that choice to do so. I am very concerned about her signing any kind of possible lease because I don't know what that 1099 is going to look like for post-2024. I just don't know that I see a world in which she continues. It's kind of a miracle she was on this season after the reveal that we didn't know from season past. I mean, that's kind of that's a little bit of a gift from production, not for us, for what this season became, but for her. Oh, God. But then there was also some stuff that happened that I was like, fuck, this is really meaningful. The biggest surprise to me in watching 647 episodes of Potomac this week was how important Mia has become to the franchise. Now, you might hear that and think, wow, this is a sign that we're really in trouble. But I think she's actually fascinating. And what she has revealed of herself and her journey and what she's going through with her, I guess, estranged, soon-to-be ex-husband. Are they split up now or not? I mean, she filed for divorce. I don't know that they're already divorced, but they're certainly on their path. Has been incredibly interesting. I mean, terrible, but interesting. The fact that she said that her husband emptied her bank account the first time she tried to leave to try to force her into financial dependence and stay. If that doesn't give you a hint of exactly who it is that she is married to, I don't know what it is that could give you more, anything that could give you more information than that. That Gordon, upon finding out she wanted to leave, attempted to force her into staying by removing any possibility that she could like seek help. any possibility that she could hire an attorney or, you know, feed herself or anything, that he emptied her bank account and so she stayed. That to me is reprehensible behavior, I have to say. And I'm not here for it. I also think sometimes this is an issue, and we don't know how old Gordon is. He's either 65 or, according to Jacqueline, 72. And that was one of Jacqueline's better lines from the entirety of her time on Potomac, when she's like, why do you keep saying 65? Like, we know he's not 65. And Mia just giving up and being like, you know, math. The math ain't mathin', but neither is his love. I think, you know, some of the quirks here of figuring out their dynamics, I think for me, at least, when I found out that she had filed or had left or was planning to file, I was honestly a little confused about what was going on. Some of that confusion continued this season, but now we're at a point with the information that we're getting where it makes a little bit more sense. And I think also this is where, you know, sometimes you fall in love with someone and there's a huge age gap and it works out. You found each other at, you know, you're in different chapters of your life, but the right points in your life to be together. That's all fine and good. Fully appreciated. I've dated with probably larger age gaps between me, young, sprightly, and a couple other people where it's probably a similar age gap. I'm trying to do the math in my head. I don't know how old Mia is because she won't tell us. So it's probably her age gap with Gordon is likely greater than any that I've experienced in dating. Yeah, I think it's actually probably greater by like at least a decade if I'm doing the math in my head. But again, what is math? Because we don't really know how old Mia is. But I think this is also the thing that might happen in some dynamics where the age gap doesn't matter. It doesn't feel as strange or as strained until you go through some of these moments of just loss and chaos and maybe just age of like Gordon coming to the point of not being interested or able to understand and communicate with Mia in the way that she wants, and also maybe be the kind of person that she has decided that she wants to be with. Maybe that just becomes more and more apparent with time, regardless of age. And I do also think, like, I think at one point she referenced marital vows, but it just kind of got me thinking of the idea of like richer and poorer, because we've seen two examples of that when it comes to like the dissolution of a marriage with Mauricio and Kyle. It's the richer. Like, what does the richer enable when it comes to the breakdown of a divorce? And what does the poorer reveal? Like, the richer enabling, I think, is a continuation of Mauricio's poor behavior when it comes, see how I always bring it back to Beverly Hills? You're welcome, frankly, at this point. But when it comes to Mauricio's poor behavior, whatever happened with the Kyle losing trust, which I guess he's trying to like spin in real time in press of like, oh, Beverly Hills, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Watch my show on Netflix. Nothing happened. Okay, great. When Mauricio is just able to enable his own selfish interests, which I at one point maybe were less selfish than they are now, of just a certain regimented kind of life that does not seemingly include Kyle except when he wants it to, versus what does the poor reveal when you don't have the financial resources that you had before? In the case of Mia and Gordon, you're going through this enormous loss, breakdown of family dynamics with Gordon's family, both of them being pushed out of the family business, both of their largest streams of income. Mia saying her first season, she made like $400K plus a year. It's a very significant income to lose, especially to lose with no notice. And you have attorney's fees on top of that. So what does this moment of like financial strain reveal about a person's psyche, about a person's interest to fight all of this, to seek vengeance, to seek justice in a way that comes with some sort of financial dividend past the point in which Mia wants to fight, where she doesn't want to continue this. And I think she's also thinking to herself, how much more family does Gordon need to lose as the result of this? And also, what happened? This didn't, in fact, maybe happen as a total shock out of nowhere. What areas of this is Gordon actually responsible for? Like, what did he participate in or do that led to the family wanting to push him out? I'm not saying it wasn't a shock to him, but I am saying that there had to be, I think, from the way that Mia seems to be describing it, some sort of trail here of breadcrumbs of like something happened and then something else. And is Gordon taking any responsibility for that? That's a question I don't have an answer to. I think having watched the season, there were two moments, both about the same topic that were incredibly meaningful. I can't believe I haven't mentioned Karen Huger, by the way. Karen Huger, just continue Karening on, living her best life. Unfortunately, actually, news came out that she was in a car accident, and I don't have any details on that at the point in which I'm recording this episode, so I hope that she is okay. She was cited at this point. Not a lot of details were released about the car accident, so I am sure more information will come out, and I hope that she is okay and anyone else who is potentially involved. I don't believe anyone else was potentially involved, but that she is okay, and I'm sure more information will come out in the days, if not hours, to come. But circling back to Mia, that Mia's openness and moments of vulnerability talking about her a sexual assault that happened when she was younger. We saw that at Karen's luncheon, which was an incredibly emotional, I think, vulnerable experience for many of us, honestly, just watching Mia have this triggering kind of memory, a little bit of like a memory attack of like not being able to sit through this luncheon because of all of the emotions that she's feeling and the upset, and her revealing at the luncheon that one of the reasons that she feels like she is held on to a significant amount of anger toward Jacqueline, or the reasons that she hasn't been necessarily a particularly good friend to Jacqueline, is because of subconscious anger that she felt about Jacqueline leaving her at, I think it was the home of Jacqueline's then boyfriend, where Mia was left with the boyfriend, and unfortunately the boyfriend sexually assaulted her. And it is a terrible trauma to continue, especially if it's connected to the experience of feeling like you were betrayed in memory, even in just in memory, and how you are remembering the circumstance and feeling like your friend did not keep you safe in a way that has affected you for many years since, in the years that have followed. And I think what was really important about their conversation in the crab boil, I guess in another room, in the champagne room maybe of the crab boil, was Mia talking about the fact that she has carried frustration and upset about this secret that she feels like they all decided to keep together, feeling like thinking that Jacqueline always knew about the sexual assault that took place, and Jacqueline saying, "I did not know. I did not know until a few years after the fact." It does not seem apparent that these women ever talked about it. So maybe there was some sort of like, you know, Jacqueline didn't know for a few years. When she found out, I think she said, "They told me." I don't know who the they was, but it does not seem like there was a conversation that maybe ever took place at that point, which was a few years after the fact. But I just feel so terribly for Mia to have carried that burden, which was not only traumatic for the specific to the assault itself, but also the trauma of feeling like of the strain that put on the friendship with the person that one could argue she would be leaning on for support. And obviously, in terms of what Jacqueline said, you know, she was like, "That's why I've given you a lot of grace when I felt like you've mistreated me, because I carried guilt for what I found out happened, that Jacqueline was carrying her own trauma from that experience. And having these two women be able to sit down and look at each other and talk openly, maybe for the first time, about that, about this thing that happened that obviously forever affected both of their lives, was incredibly meaningful. And it's something that I wish people were talking about. It's why I'm glad that I caught up on Potomac. It's why I felt honestly a little guilty about not watching, because maybe of the potential of moments like this that I think are important to talk about. It's important, I think, to hear a woman talk about it too, because at the end of the day, these are women's stories. And, you know, why remove, as a woman myself, as a voice in being able to share and just kind of sympathize with these very vulnerable conversations that are important to hear. And I'm so sorry that they've gotten lost in this kind of like shit sandwich of just being a really chaotic, muddled, confusing season. But I'm really appreciative to Mia. I cannot believe, I'm sure there are episodes from last season where when people are like, I love Mia, I was like, what? Like, Mia? Is there another one that you're talking about? Is there a different Mia? The one that you're describing? I don't think I saw it. I don't think I understood a reason why she stayed on the show, frankly. And I'm glad that she did. I don't know that this is an example of normalizing changing your mind based on new information versus just appreciating someone's growth and being thankful that they're on the show. Because I personally have found Mia's storyline to be interesting, even though I feel like we're missing a couple more stages or steps prior to her leaving Gordon ostensibly for good. And maybe we'll get to that. I guess we have one episode left, the finale. I don't know that there's needs to be a lot said about the to be continued that ended the episode. I think I said out loud when I was watching it, no, like no. When it went to just the audio after the cameras ran down and there was some sort of argument between Deborah and who was it? Wendy or Candace? I guess it was between Deborah and Candace that led to some sort of situation with Deborah and the friend of. I don't care. Sorry, I guess that's going to kick off the finale. What an unfortunate kickoff. I'm so glad that this season is almost over so they can figure out what the fuck they need to do with members of the cast. I think production needs a timeout. Whoever was in charge of this season, Charles, I guess. Charles and George. I don't know. This is not their better work, I would say. But also, if you have members of the cast who seem to be firmly in line with hating each other, I don't know. If you're not in a position where you can hire or fire, what you can do with this, I'm not sure. I wonder, you know, I think of the number of times that I've heard Dorinda talk about the fact that she used to call one of the producers from the show every day. They would have like a morning chat because Dorinda likes to talk like in a good way, in a interesting kind of delightful way, that they would talk every morning at like 7 a.m. and it would just kind of kickstart their day, which I think was just something like chatting as friends, which I always really appreciated. I just kind of wonder what those conversations were like, if any, but well, I'm sure there were many with members of the cast, production and the network of like, yeah, this is going well. I mean, nobody's able to really talk to each other. And now we find ourselves in Austin. But I just wonder where we're going to end up and how Andy, who is he interested at all in what's taking place? I wonder how he is going to attempt to rally the troops when it comes to the reunion. Like, what kind of pep talk do you have of this? Or is this some sort of final time for Candace and Giselle to hash it out or not? And Wendy's also there, and NECA, who I don't have truly anything to say. And I don't mean that as an insult. I just don't know what there is to say, because it's just been such a shit show of a season. So thank God for Mia, am I right? So I guess the reunion will happen, because we know it will. I assume it will be one mini part. if it's three, they better do a much better job. And by they, I mean production better do a better job of editing and figuring out a way to make some of this make sense than what they've done on this season. Because worst case scenario is nobody talking about the reunion. I know that their outfits were released and everybody looked great, which is concerning. When the cast of Potomac looks better, when Giselle looks better on stage than what Giselle is doing for 18 episodes prior, that's a crisis. That is a true crisis that you have on your hands. And I mean, I guess I sort of began this episode by talking about GNA, ANG, GM, Good Morning America. So those outfits, huh? So it was what? It was athleisure. So you're not working out in it. You're working out next to it, or you're walking to the gym in some of that. It looked like a lot of satin that's not breathable. So that's great. It was confused. I don't know why it's happening. Is it a rehoping we're monetizing this? Or is it for the show? I'm concerned that this is a business, but it could be great. And honestly, you know, I would continue putting faith in what Ashley does. I think that I don't know that she would be signing on to this if it had absolutely no chance, but do either of these women have style? I mean, couldn't they make one of Robin's hats? Again, doesn't she have a couple of those laying around? Throw some bedazzled studs on that shit. Take over the hat industry. I know people who bought those hats who truly still have never received them since. And that was years ago. So I guess we're now putting our faces in God's hands with the Facial Express situation, but we still don't have a hat. I don't know. I'm not sure about those extractions. I don't think we need to start with the hat and work up from there. Maybe a tennis tee or something before we get into the beauty industry. I couldn't tell you. But anyway, that's the Potomac recap. Love Karen. Karen didn't come up, but you know why that is? That's because I have so much faith in Karen, and whatever Karen does, I support when it comes to the stuff that she's doing on the show. So, you know, stuff happened. Ray's temporarily site-specific allergic to crabs, and we love that journey for him. And maybe Wendy can do a talk show episode explaining what the fuck happened this season, because we could certainly use someone letting us know in the span of like 18 to 22 minutes what happened over the course of 700 episodes. That would be great. In the meantime, guys, I'm so glad that I caught up on Potomac. I'm excited to watch the finale. Maybe I'll do a recap of it in my own special way. It's never an actual recap. It's always just like, here's one moment that I'd like to focus on for 6 hours. And I'll definitely be watching the reunion. And hopefully we get to a point where, since these women will never be in a room together ever again after that, where we can reach some sort of good conclusion. And then several of them are getting culled from the cast. And I don't know who I recommend staying or going. I'm not going to pretend that I have a terrific take on that. I just hope that the story is able to move forward, and that we just forget maybe aspects of this season, that we hold on to moments that were meaningful, and then hopefully forget everything else. And in the words of Giselle's Facial Express, I think it was a facial. Was it massage? Oh God, it wouldn't be massage. I don't think she would open herself up to that kind of jokes, to those kind of jokes, you know, when with Juan. I don't think that would happen. But in the words of that potentially leased, was it like $68,000 a year? Why is this the thing that I remember? In the words of that fun quote insignia thing on the wall, don't just wish for it, work for it. I hope that that is something that Potomac carries with it into next season. Let us all say amen. Guys, follow me on social at Instagram. Oh my God, Potomac really took it out of me. At Dame Galley on Instagram. Also allegedly thread, same thingy, handle, etc. I'm a pro. And join the Andy Scrolls Patreon. Number one way to support the pod, gives me the strength to go back to that candy shop before the finale and the reunion arc, at patreon.com/AndysGirls. There's also a premium tier where you can kiki with me. We can record a Patreon episode or have a private Zoom kiki Kiki. I've done both, love doing both. And so all those tiers and more bonus episodes and opportunities to sass are available at the AG page. And thanks so much for listening. Let me know your thoughts and feels. Are you watching Potomac? Did you give up? Safe space. Let me know. Do you have a hot take on somebody? Bless you. Bless your heart. And I'm curious to hear. So let me know on the little graphic for this episode when it goes up. And in the meantime, thanks again for listening. And we royally will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.